Everyone, welcome to Ending the Drought, a Buffalo Bills fan podcast. This is Season 3, Episode 7. I'm Jason Webster, here with your other hosts, Jake Cranston and Jeff Webster.
Jake, gentlemen.
Jason, Jake.
What's going on, fellas?
Not much. Bros.
Well, we found out the good news today in the 53-man roster.
We did.
Any big surprises?
No. I mean, it was funny because they have a lot of depth, and you would think that maybe there would be some, but we had talked about our predictions, and yeah, there were some possibilities. We thought O.J. Howard hadn't really impressed amazingly, and there you go. He's cut.
Yeah.
He's gone bye-bye. So I don't think there was anything crazy. I was a little surprised Trey White ended up on the PUP. You know, when Brandon Bean last week said that he was holding out right to the final, you know, hour
right.
to make that call. Must have been really close, but hopefully in four weeks or whatever when he comes back or is eligible to come back, they'll be able to bring him back and get him back into game shape. I mean, I know he's been working out. He's been running. He's been working out on the side by himself. You can't practice with the team when you're on the PUP. So hopefully that's not an indication of a long-term situation. They did not move him to the IR, which I think is 8 games.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 4 games. So.
Yeah, it's not that bad. I mean,
no.
Do they have to keep him on there for the full 4 games?
Yes.
Okay. Minimally, so they must have assumed that he needed at least that much time.
Right. And even if they're going, well, he's definitely going to miss 3, at that point,
you better safe than
free
sorry.
Up the roster spot. Give him the extra week. But I think after they activate him, he's got 21 days to actually join the squad or whatever, or else he goes on full season IR. So here's hoping it's not an indication of a long-term problem.
Yeah, so my surprise definitely was Hodgins not making the roster over Kumerow, but
was it more of a disappointment or a surprise?
A lot of these guys, a surprise for me. I mean, a lot of these guys were saying that Hodgins just didn't cut it on special teams. So if that's the case, then okay, so Kumerow is that much better than he is on special teams. Okay, fine. But then is it more important to have a good special teamer in your wide receiver position that isn't a good wide receiver in the sixth position?
Right.
Or is it more important to have a guy that's not great in special teams but probably can learn the position? And he's definitely more solid at the wide receiver position than Hodgins.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I don't know.
Well, like, I think it's, in my opinion, it might be just a situation where when you're down that far on the depth chart. I mean, look at how they've used Kumerow in the past. What do you have, like a couple of catches last year? Like,
he hasn't been a factor in the wide receiver position at all.
Right.
And so is he that good at special teams?
I don't know.
That
but
much
maybe
better?
They were looking at Hodgins not being able to play special teams and being so far down the depth chart, he wouldn't really play a ton either. So I with you, we both are huge fans of Isaiah Hodgins and want nothing more than to see him join the squad. I really, really would love to see that. Gabe Davis, we pushed for him, and look where he's at now. Like, he's not only the number 2 wide receiver, he could perform like a number 1. He's being drafted in fantasy like a number 1. So,
yeah, I just think Hodgins would have a better opportunity to make some form of impact as a wide receiver on this roster.
As a wide receiver. But, on a team that throws the ball a ton.
But according to Tasker and Brown, they said that Hodgins, they gave him all the opportunity to play in special teams in this preseason, and he just kind of looked lost. He just didn't have the, the technique or whatever. I don't even know, was he playing, what is he playing? He wasn't playing gunner. He was playing one of the outside, like, blocker.
So it sounds more like a mental issue than a physical issue.
Well, it's
he probably had the talent. He just didn't have the focus.
Yeah, because he's got the size. You know, he's a little leaner, I think, than Kumerow, but he still has size, and he's a decent blocker.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, special teams, I'm not saying guys on special teams are not, you know, noteworthy to say, hey, these guys are good at what they do. But the thing is, special teams is pretty straightforward. You know, you don't have to remember a playbook on special teams. There's certain things you have to remember. But, I mean, is it really that big of a difference between the two that, like, Hodgins just couldn't make the roster? I don't understand it, but so that's a disappointment for me on that end. It's not like I don't like Kumerow. I just think that he doesn't really bring much else besides, I guess, being a good special teamer.
Well,
I was just going to say that this may be a rude thing to say, but I don't know if either of them were so relevant that they were irreplaceable. You know what I mean? Like, they're both okay.
Yeah.
But when you're choosing between two okay things, I guess it's kind of like picking a coin at that point, you know?
Yeah, like, which is more important to you at that point? Is it,
right.
Is it a six wide receiver that is good, but he's not going to see the field very much? Or is it a good special teamer that doesn't, he's going to be good on special teams in his wide receiver position?
Yeah, again, a team that's going for a Super Bowl, I'm sure it came down to just a little difference, like just an edge for, like you said, special teams over a guy that's going to join a wide receiver room that's probably not going to see the field a bunch.
Right.
May actually even not dress a lot of the time. So
2 years ago, Hodgins would have made this roster as a wide receiver. And no problem.
For sure.
If he was playing this way.
I agree.
But it just didn't work out like that. So.
Right. But a guy that we were really pulling for and both liked, Quentin Morris, you know, we thought he was on the outside looking in, and boom, O.J. Howard's cut. He's in.
Yeah.
So
that surprised me a little bit.
Yeah, good for him. You know what I mean? He's a very athletic, and he's a good pass catcher. I see why they made the move they did. I see why they kept him.
Yeah, it was pretty early in camp that O.J. Howard was being reported as like, all right, he's not looking great right now.
Yeah,
he
was consistent.
Yeah.
Like week after week after week, that's the reports come out of camp.
Yep.
He seemed a bit slow. He seemed just not like, I don't know.
Whatever. There's nothing. Yeah, there's nothing about him that bringing him into this offense where, you know, we thought him being a 6'6 guy or 6'7, whatever he is, a huge target.
Right. Big guy.
We're like, all right, the round one talent that he brought from Alabama, you know, he had some injury issues in Tampa. If any offense can bring a guy in and kind of revitalize his career, maybe it's going to be ours. And he just couldn't show anything significant to stay on this team, where a guy like Quentin Morris is, what, a couple years in the league. He's super young.
It's a second year.
Super athletic, you know. So, yeah.
I was really thinking that at some point they would hold on to him long enough, he would have that Dawson Knox breakout moment. You know,
right.
I just expected
right.
it to happen at some point. Yep. But I guess they just got sick of waiting.
Well, and the funny thing is, he actually got replaced by two guys because Sweeney's a better blocker than Howard, and Quentin Morris is a better receiver than Howard. So, you know, it just worked out where amongst the three guys, you can only keep two. They both excelled at what they do best. And again, good for Tommy Sweeney. You know what I mean? Like, if he missed an entire year because of the issue with the heart, because of COVID and stuff like that, like, you know, you wondered where his career was going to go. So making the squad, and basically is, I think, your number two tight end. I think he'll probably start over Quentin Morris a good number of the time, you know, good number of the plays. Good for him, man. I like Tommy Sweeney. He's another good dude, you know, like.
And I think that that's something these last two, you know, moves that we've talked about really show, is that if you're going to have a guy who's not going to see a lot of field time, they want to make sure that when you get your moment that you're the best at what they're putting you in.
Yeah.
You know, so just regardless of who's a more talented player or anything else, you have to make sure that when they touch the field for that purpose, you've got the best guy you can get.
Right. And since you're the college guy, let's talk a little bit about a cornerback who kind of surprised for the first time made an active roster in Cam Lewis.
Yeah. Yeah. Cam Lewis, he's been on the squad for 3 years now, came up through UB. And he's just been a guy that's been solid. You know,
won't go away.
Yeah, he hasn't been flashy. He's not the biggest corner. He's not the fastest corner. He's not the strongest corner. But what he has is good technique.
Right.
And he's learned good technique through the last couple years here with the Bills regime. And they haven't gave up on him because they can see, you know, the potential that he has. And he's not going to be a starting corner in this league.
Right.
But
right.
what he could be is a solid depth guy. If someone goes down, he can come in. He knows this defense.
Another special teamer.
Yeah, exactly. So having Cam Lewis on the squad is cool to see. It's neat to have a local product, you know, from UB on the team. And speaking of a local product, we obviously need a punter now because of the whole ordeal with Areza. Every Bills fan out there knows the whole story with Areza. And I'll be the first to say man, it's sucky to have that happen to him. I mean, I feel bad for him just in general that he has to go through what he's going through.
Right.
Obviously, for the girl that's involved, you know, you just feel bad for every party in right. that right now.
For sure. It's just somebody.
Yeah, it's a tough situation.
Is suffering.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
It's just tough. It's heavy on the team. I'm sure it was heavy in the locker room, heavy on Bean, heavy on sure. McDermott. They both said, they're like, look, Brandon Bean's like, I'm a GM. He's, you know, McDermott's our coach. Like, we don't have access to everything. We're football guys. We're not law guys here. So
right.
they did what they thought was best in getting rid of Areza so he can, and Brandon Bean put it best. We got rid of him. So we let him go, quote unquote, so he can take care of what's most important right now in this legal
deal
matter.
With this. Yeah. Football
just shouldn't matter to him.
Yes,
so
and more really, important shit. And really, honestly, we're lucky that this happened when it did. Because if it had been a couple weeks from now and it was too late to go back, now you're talking about dragging out a long legal issue and something plaguing the team as far as morale and stuff.
Yeah.
Like it was a cancer that could be cut away when it was.
Right.
It couldn't have
and
been.
And if
a couple
he did
weeks,
those things,
yes. not as easily.
Then I'm in, man. He should pay the price. It was horrific, some of the things they talked about.
Yeah,
so,
it was definitely messed up.
So, you know, I hope it, for all parties involved, like you said, I hope it has whatever
yeah, it's got to play out
ending in, that can be the best for everybody.
It's got to play out in the courts.
Yeah, you know, it's just too bad.
The thing is that everybody...
It's a bad situation.
With social media right now, people just attack from the storyline. You know, everybody's right. just attacking him and... I guess the kid's getting death threats and things like that.
Yeah,
it's like,
that's not.
It's like, listen, like he hasn't been proven guilty yet,
right?
You know,
yep.
What's people are making him guilty on social media,
right?
Okay, and that's not fair to him.
That's the world you know? We live in, though, doesn't that suck?
Well, it's shitty. You know, you can't
terrible.
You can't just believe everything on social media and all of a sudden, boom, like
right.
everybody's hating on the guy. You know,
yeah, that's why we have laws and rules and things like that, like social media. Shut your mouth and let it play out.
It's just got something like that's got to play out in the courts.
Feel
the
bad
legal
for
system.
The people that you should, you know. I mean, it's just.
But the thing is that the point I was getting to is when I said speaking of a local product a minute ago, there's a guy from Grand Island that the Titans just cut their punter. I can't remember his first
Brett
name.
Something.
Brett Kern.
Brett Kern. Yeah.
So I don't know if they're specifically looking at him. I know he tried out. There's a couple guys that tried out. I don't know the names off the top of my head again, but
yeah, we're not sure how this is going to play into the final 53.
Well,
right?
Yeah, we need a punter.
Down to 53, but we don't have a punter.
Yeah, we
so.
Need a punter, so they're going to have to cut
Unless
somebody.
Matt Barkley is going to be that guy.
Well, most likely Marquez Stevenson. He's the seventh receiver, so
yeah,
they're probably going to put him on IR again.
Right,
Tasker was saying that. So my guess is the same thing. Like. Once we sign a punter, Stevenson's going on IR. There's the room for the punter
yep.
on there. So,
yep.
but yeah, I mean, it's they got to be signing a punter sometime soon here. And like Jason,
yeah.
man, can you imagine this happen like in the middle of the season or like
yeah, no
even
kidding.
Even just like game two or three, like we're scrambling to try to find a punter.
Yeah,
you know?
you're trying to get your legs in the beginning of the season. You don't need shit like that happening.
You know, no. it's funny because I remember just the last few years, these teams that couldn't find a kicker, and they're going for it on fourth down just about every time because their kickers are horrible.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need that, especially if you're making a Super Bowl run. A mediocre punter will work, you know?
Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah. Punt God, that would be fantastic, but you don't – that's not going to get you into a Super Bowl. That's not the all-in be-all. Like you said, flipping the field, fantastic. You got to look forward to something like that. But at the same time, the Bills probably punted less than most teams in the NFL. A sufficient punter.
Yeah, they're on the back end.
A middle of the pack punter yep. is going to do everything they need to do. So well, they're
Matt,
fine.
Matt Hawk is he last year his average was in the back end of the league. So it's not like we had this terrific punter anyway.
Yeah, he's like
so
29th or 30th
if we can get someone that's going to be
well he
in
was
the mid,
pretty
you know?
High the first half of the season. He kind of trailed off towards the end.
Yep.
And it's one of those things, we've seen it before, where, you know, over time, people can become different on the Bills, that maybe they wouldn't have that opportunity on another team. But I don't think they're bringing him back, so it doesn't really matter anyway.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, he signed with the Colts, so
yep.
he's done.
Yep.
But, yeah, as far as the roster goes, I think for the most part, everybody out there, all you Bills Mafia fans, pretty much saw the writing on the wall of who's going to be on this roster. There was a couple bubble guys that we thought of.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no big surprises, you know? There's really not. I mean, the O.J. Howard one might be the, I guess, the biggest surprise, if you want to call it that. But there's a lot of people, again, saying that, hey, he just didn't look good. And it's not a big surprise, I bet you, in a lot of people's eyes.
Well, so. And it's funny, too, because not too many teams, you can look at even, say, let's just say the defensive side of the ball. Like, we had 9 guys that were pretty much a lock on the defensive line. We had a half a dozen linebackers that were pretty much a lock, at least 5. You know, the 6th one, sure, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the same thing. And then in the cornerback room, we have a few more than what we thought we would have in the cornerback room. But we kind of had a pretty good idea on the vast majority of them. Safeties, you know, the same thing. So
exactly.
Yeah, it was kind of cool to just about nail it on the defensive side of the ball. You know, we talked about Nick McLeod and Cam Lewis both being at practice.
Right.
So that was a really close competition.
Yeah, it was.
You know, other than that, most of the defense had been pretty much locked in place at the end of last week.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're close to the season, man. We got 9 more days until the opener.
That's
so
something.
This is
when
a good.
This comes out, it's a week.
Yeah. It's a good roster. I'm super happy with it. I feel
absolutely.
I feel confident. So, all right, I guess that's enough of the roster, because we got to get into some fantasy football.
Yes, sir.
It's our fantasy football podcast, basically, is how we want to portray it out there to everybody. We just wanted to cover the roster. But
yeah.
But fantasy football is coming up and hot and heavy for a lot of people. So,
yeah, man.
You know, I know, Jeff, you got your draft coming up September 5th or 6th.
I think it's the 5th. And then
We have another one that we're both in.
All 3 of us are in 2 leagues, fifth and 6th.
So they're both back-to-back coming up quick. Yep. So we just want to kind of dig in and talk about, you know, our players that we like, guys that we, you know, think that you shouldn't sleep on, some overvalued guys, breakout players, stuff like that. So why don't you start us off, Jeff?
All right. Well, to get started, we might as well start close to home. One guy that I feel that may not be drafted as often as he might have been, even say a year ago, is Devin Singletary. With James Cook in the mix, there's a lot of talk about James Cook possibly even taking over for Singletary maybe next year. Singletary's on the final year of his contract. The Bills don't sound like the kind of club that are willing to give guys, you know, over $10 million a year to a running back.
Yeah.
It sounds like they would just as soon draft guys, keep a rotation going, which is fine. I kind of agree with that. We've talked about how important an offensive line is. But one of the things, a few of the things I like about Devin Singletary specifically this year is, yes, James Cook is going to be in the mix, but this regime, and especially Sean McDermott, they kind of like the slow roll rookies. Like Josh Allen wasn't even supposed to play the first year. If it wasn't for Nate Peterman just completely crapping out, he may have spent more time on the bench, maybe come in later in the season. But most of the time for the first few games, a handful of games, 6-8 games, rookies don't see the field a ton. They get mixed in just to kind of get them used to the speed of the game. But they don't like to take somebody and just, you know, toss him into the fire. So that gives Singletary an opportunity to do what he did at the end of last year and get a lock on that position as the number one running back. They literally made him a 3-down back last year for the first time, most of the time, at the end of last season. If you count the playoffs, we talked about this in the last 4 games of the regular season, Devin Singletary was like the second highest fantasy point scorer in PPR. He actually was excellent. Some of the things are, like, in the last 5 games of the regular season, too, he's like, or including the playoffs, he was like top 5. He had 9 touchdowns in those last 6 games, counting the playoffs. He was really on a roll.
Yeah, his ADP, though, his average draft position is still in the bottom half of the league right now, which is still crazy to me.
Yeah, he's like RB31 being drafted right now.
I don't still think, I mean, when you're looking at all these different running backs that are available right now, I still think that Singletary, he's still going to be a late round guy, though. For most drafts, unfortunately.
Not necessarily unfortunate because it does provide an opportunity, right?
Like, well, you can get a good value in the late rounds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When you get to that point, you're drafting. I mean, you're literally talking about most leagues running a couple of running backs being drafted as a 31st running back off the board.
Yep.
You've got possibly a number two back that you're getting as a number three.
Yeah, you can definitely
or better
get really good value for him in the later round. And for me, a player that you can get really good value in my opinion for fantasy football in late rounds, Jalen Hurts right now is a guy that they're looking at for round six roughly to be drafted in.
Yeah.
So a couple of things that I wanted to bring up about Jalen Hurts. Now, if you're comparing him to the almighty Patrick Mahomes, for instance,
right?
You know, fantasy football talk here. Jalen Hurts is tied for fantasy points per game with Mahomes with 21.3 points. So, I mean, right there, it's like, okay.
We're saying last year.
As far as last year. Now, between those two, who has more top 25-plus point weeks? It's tied six times between the two.
Right.
Who's had more games with fewer than 15 points? Mahomes 5-3 on that one. Which quarterback lost a top 10 wide receiver? That's Pat Mahomes. Yeah. Lost his top 10 wide receiver. Which quarterback has gained a top 10 wide receiver? A.J. Brown goes to the Eagles.
Yep.
So since Hurst became a starter since week 14, gentlemen, he's generally been the better player for fantasy football in that
of those
comparison.
Two guys. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So so a guy like Jalen Hurts, being a round six guy, I mean, if you get him in round six, talk about a smoking value.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, because you got your top end quarterbacks are going to go, I mean, depending on the league, like in our league, I see Josh Allen probably going a second or third round.
Yes.
Mahomes in the same area.
Yes.
Lamar Jackson, Aaron Rodgers, you know, you got your top half a dozen guys that'll be way gone by sixth round. So you're thinking, you know, you're not going to get one of those elite guys. Well, hey, here comes round six or round five.
Yep.
And you jump in front of a few guys, you might be looking at a top five quarterback this year.
Big time, man. I mean, when you add a guy like A.J. Brown to the Eagles.
Yeah, he's going to be great.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge.
He's going to be great.
Yeah, that's huge for Jalen Hurts because, let's face it, he didn't have a really true, you know, wide receiver one last year that he could go to on a consistent basis, you know.
Right.
And for him to have the year he did last year, I mean, dude, he potentially could be a close to a 4,000-yard passer this year.
Yeah, you know? I have A.J. Brown in my own personal list of guys I'm trying to target.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because he's playing with Devonta Smith, who's a hell of a receiver. It's almost that Diggs-Davis kind of combination where you can't double-team one without sacrificing the other, right? Like, how do you cover all these guys?
Exactly.
Philadelphia is going to have a smoking good squad this year. They're going to be very good.
Yeah, 100%.
They're my sleeper team for winning the NFC.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas is still shot to me.
Yeah.
You know,
Redskins,
I mean, that division arguably has been one of the poorest divisions in all of football for some
years
now.
Yeah, the Commanders. I mean, there's just not a lot going on there, man.
No, not much, man.
Yeah. So, I agree with that 100%. 100%.
Yeah.
For sure.
I got a couple of players. I got a little bit of a list, too, Jeff.
Go for it.
Players to take early.
Yeah.
I'm sure you like.
I got. Well, like I said, I only put together a few. So, I got.
No, that's fine.
I got another guy we'll talk about, but let's cover a few of your
guys. Yeah, I mean, guys that I've kind of looked at and, you know, just kind of compiled a little bit of a list. Guys that you want to draft early. Now, depending on what kind of draft you're doing, if you're doing a snake draft, if you're doing, you know, the type of
PPR,
draft.
Ours is generally PPR.
If you do like our draft, well, you're doing the auction league.
Yep.
So it depends on how it kind of falls. But guys you particularly want to target early, Courtland Sutton.
That's a good one.
Denver Bronco. Last year, he was right around 1,000-yard receiver. Had a very, very poor quarterback play. And he was still
very effective.
I mean, right around 1,000 yards. So, When you add Russell Wilson into the mix, Courtland Sutton is a guy that is going to be a very top-notch receiver for. Yeah. I mean, that's going to be his go-to guy.
We talked about that as keys when you're talking about wide receivers, keys, things to look for. one of a number of them, but one of them is quarterback play, right? If you're going from a bad quarterback to a good quarterback, that's a great thing. And obviously the reverse, if you're going from a really good quarterback to a lesser quarterback, that can be a problem. And we've seen it a million times with not only wide receivers, but running backs.
Running backs are big.
Le'Veon Bell goes from Pittsburgh, goes to the Jets. I think it was the Jets. And disappears.
Right, exactly.
And basically his career is almost over after that. You know what I mean? He sits a year and then it's over.
It's tough change when you go from a great line to a bad line. But, but I mean, I got Cortland Sutton. I thought, you know,
that's a good one.
He's a top-notch wide receiver you want to take early. Chase Edmonds, running back for the Dolphins.
Yep.
Guy you want to look at taking early. I mean, the biggest thing with Chase Edmonds is he was great in the zone run blocking scheme.
In Arizona.
He was one of the top backs in Arizona. Yep. At that type of play in zone block scheme. So he goes over to Miami, and they originally wanted to go with the three-headed back. They released Sony Michel, so now you know Chase Edmonds is going to get a junk load of carries.
Right.
And they do the same type of scheme, zone block scheme. That's a guy to watch.
Right.
Michael Pittman, he was a number one wide receiver for them last year.
It's hard to understand why. He isn't talked about a great deal.
Well, like, I mean, he was
just a rock solid wide receiver.
Right in a 1,000-something yards last year. Yeah. Now you're adding a quarterback that is going to be a little more consistent in the style of play they want with Matt Ryan. So Michael Pittman, definitely a guy you want to look at drafting early.
Yep.
Austin Eckler, same thing. He's been consistent year after year.
Yeah, he's definitely high end.
A guy that chunks up pretty good points. Good red zone guy.
Yeah, he'll be top five off the board this year, I bet.
Easily. Yeah. Jonathan Taylor's a no-brainer.
Yep.
You know?
Same thing.
Christian McCaffrey, obviously a no-brainer.
Well, the issue with him is injuries, right? If you want to find out what Christian McCaffrey has done so far in fantasy, you can always talk to Jason because he basically has him every year.
It's tough. I know.
The past decade of my life, fantasy-wise, has been devoted to running backs who get injured. It's like Tomlinson and then Le'Veon Bell and McCaffrey. Yeah. I always push really hard to get like a good first, you know, running back if I can. But more and more lately, I've been pushing to just do like two good wides because it's just so much safer to me. Yeah. Wide receivers don't get injured as much.
Less. You're right.
It's tough. You know, McCaffrey, again, is some people are going to go into this year's draft and probably won't want to touch him with the 30-foot stick because of his injuries. But
that's another person's opportunity. Yeah, right.
Right. Isn't you get him without an injury year,
sure,
he could be huge. So to me, it's kind of a risk to take, but that's all
risk,
up to you.
High risk, high reward, though, man. That's what I'm all about. Like, exactly. I've always done that.
That's up to you as the fantasy team owner. So
sure.
Derrick Henry, obviously a guy you want to look at early. Yep. Cooper Kupp, Justin Jefferson. So the biggest thing that I can say as a guy that's been playing fantasy football for a long time, you want to go with guys, running backs and wide receivers, hot and heavy in the early rounds. Because those are your guys that are going to give you your most points.
Yep.
You know, if you're in a PPR league, running backs that are going to catch the ball, wide receivers, obviously, that are going to catch the ball, guys that are going to get chunk yards. I mean, that's what I would go with is just the wide receiver, the running back guys that are going to give you the stats, you know.
Something I brought up earlier about I would probably bring up during this podcast was that also people should trust their instincts, right? Because like I said, if you have a pre-notion about any particular player, if you look long enough, you're going to find somebody that supports your opinion. But do the work. Like the more you put into it, the more you're going to get out of it, like you've done. You know, you put in a lot of work putting together a list. I did also.
Yep.
You know, I'm kind of a stats guy, so I'm kind of always looking at that.
Right.
But the Justin Fields, we talked about a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's some numbers that most people aren't aware of. But don't worry too much about what everybody's saying, all the experts are saying, because guess what? A lot of the time they're not going to be right. Something's going to go wrong. You know, you're just hedging your bets. If you have an indication that there's somebody that you think is going to excel, in the vast majority of the people you're hearing talking about it agree, that's probably a pretty good sign.
Yeah, don't be scared to draft players that are going to be on shitty teams, because fantasy football doesn't matter if the team ends up winning two or three games. It matters what these players are doing,
man.
Yeah, it just matters what these players are doing on the field. So,
right.
You know, don't be afraid to do to draft a guy from the Jets or to draft a guy like Justin Fields, you know?
I have never allowed that to really affect me unless it's a quarterback that I'm worried about.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's different.
Like, if I'm concerned that the quarterback's going to be gone in the first couple of weeks, then you can't really risk it anymore, especially with wide receivers.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. But, yeah, I mean, a running back, a wide receiver, guys like that.
Inconsistency.
If they're going to be,
you know what I mean?
If they're going to be a big point guys, go get them, you know?
I mean, one of the reasons I'm kind of high on Stephon Diggs this year, even with Gabe Davis coming on, is the fact that you have that relationship. You know, Stephon Diggs is still going to see those red zone targets. He's going to see a ton of targets. Like, it's just consistency, and that's most of the time what you're looking for in fantasy football. It doesn't help you if a guy scores 30 points 1 week and six the next. It doesn't.
No.
It's not going to do it. You need all your guys performing at a certain level week after week after week so you have a high point total and a better chance of winning. So, yeah, consistency is big. But one of the other guys I like a lot this year brings us full circle right back to Philadelphia again.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I feel like I'm a little bit weighted heavy towards Philadelphia. But Miles Sanders, man, I mean, there's some risk of injury there too. But, I mean, last year he missed five games. He still averaged 5.5 yards a carry. Like, that's going to get you consistency. The funny thing is he's being drafted lower this year because of his output last year. But in all the games he played, how many touchdowns do you think he had rushing or receiving?
I don't even know, man.
How about none?
Right.
None.
Right, yeah, yeah.
As the number one back on the Philadelphia Eagles, he did not have a single touchdown running the ball or receiving the ball. On average, most running backs in the NFL score a touchdown about every 27 carries.
Right.
He had over 150 carries and scored zero.
Well,
so you could, you can make the argument that that means he's not getting the ball in key situations. I personally chalk it up to bad luck.
Well, the thing that I have to kind of counter you on that a little bit is I have a don't sleep on couple guys in fantasy. So don't sleep on the one guy that counteracts your guy, Jeff, is Kenneth Gainwell for the Eagles.
Yep.
So the thing with him, he's a running back as well. He was ninth among qualified running backs in broken tackle rate.
Right.
He's targeted on 24.7 of his routes. So that's sixth best.
Right.
Also, he's seventh among running backs in fantasy points per opportunity.
Yep.
So that's where he will take away.
Oh, yeah.
You
There's
know,
competition there.
He'll take a lot of that away from,
right.
from your guy. So, I mean.
I just think it'll be less if he stays healthy. Again, high risk, high reward. You're drafting Sanders somewhere around like a backup, A.J. Dillon. Or Damian Harris.
Yeah, he's a late round guy. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a later pick.
Yep.
And you might be looking at, again, a running back who could finish in top 10 or 12. So high risk, high reward. It depends on your philosophy.
Tough. Yeah. Well, it's tough when you got a guy with like Gainwell's playing as well as he did with for fantasy purposes last year, too.
Right.
You know,
but with Sanders being hurt five games and actually missing five games, he's actually hurt more than that. How much of the Gainwell thing was a benefit of not having Sanders in the game?
Well, it shows you exactly that, though. Gainwell comes in and he's able to prove that he's not just a basic commodity. He's a guy that can come in and prove that he's a guy that's going to be productive.
Well, and that's where people have to do that work, right? I mean, you got to look at the entire season last year. If somebody you're interested in, really interested in, kind of dive into it a little bit more because there's other guys that we'll talk about in a few minutes here that follow the similar philosophy. Now, you got any guys that maybe people should try to avoid for the most part?
I have an overvalued, and that's Cam Akers. He's overvalued in my opinion. Last year, he was only 3.3 yards per touch in his return last year from being injured.
Right.
He missed time with that soft tissue injury again this year in camp.
Mm-hmm.
And the team reportedly wants to use a committee with Darrell Henderson.
Yep.
Just one top. He only had one top 10 week in 14 career regular season games, dude.
Yeah.
So he's a guy to me that's definitely looking like an overvalued type guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it. Yeah. Personally, I worry about Jalen Waddle, not the player, but where he's being drafted.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, he was pretty much top dog. But now there's Tyreek Hill. You got a couple of guys that are going to compete for receptions, red zone targets, you know. So I'm looking at him as possibly being a little bit overvalued. Nobody knows what Tua is going to be able to produce, but he's going to have talent there. But Tyreek Hill has a way of taking over a game. So, yeah, maybe he doesn't perform like he did last year. So
we'll see
how that goes.
It's totally up in the air, you know. It just depends, like you said, on what these other wide receivers, how they produce. You know, when you bring in Tyreek Hill into the mix, that kind of throws a juggernaut in there a little bit.
Yeah. As you take away from Kansas City, you add to the mix in Miami.
Absolutely.
It may bring another player down slightly.
100%. A couple other guys that I have a don't sleep on to add to Kenneth Gainwell. Like you said earlier, Jeff, Justin Fields. I mean, the guy banked four top 10 weeks over his final five starts in 21. So you got to look at him and being like, okay, he started figuring some stuff out at the end of the year last year. Now, the Bears, again, are going to be probably a 3-4 win team this year. But Justin Fields, his ability is, I mean, his ceiling could be pretty high.
Well, but
he just doesn't have a lot around him. But he can still be a type of guy that's he could give you a good chunk points. Now, you could draft him to be not your main number one, but, you know, a guy that you want to put in when you have a bye week
or an injury,
something like that.
Yeah. Beyond that, he does run with the ball. I mean,
he does.
He produces with his legs when nobody's available.
Exactly.
And they're going to be playing from behind a great deal of the time, which means he's going to be throwing 35 to 45 passes every game.
Yeah, he's going to be chunking it up.
Yeah. So as long as your league scores like ours, where you get more points for a touchdown than an interception, it really shouldn't hurt him that much if he's throwing the ball a bunch.
Yeah.
And running it, scrambling.
Exactly. Don't sleep on Christian Kirk, Jeff. Week 2 preseason, 33 of 40 first-team snaps. That's 82.5% he had. Okay. Yeah. He ran a route on 22 of the 24 dropbacks. Five catches for 54 yards on 8 targets. So, again, Jacksonville is going to be a team that's going to be probably a 4 or 5 win team in that area.
Yeah.
But since they got Doug Peterson, their offense is going to be that much better. I mean, look what he did in Philly. Your starting quarterback and Trevor Lawrence is going to be that much better, I think.
Should be better.
You know, they're already saying this preseason, and I haven't got to see him much, but they're already saying this preseason he's looking better.
So Marvin Jones is still their number one, but I think he's 32 this year, and we talked about what aging receivers can kind of go through.
100%.
Right?
Yep.
So, yeah, I could see a lot of reasons why Christian Kirk could be one of those guys that surprises.
100%.
Yeah. For me, a guy that I think people kind of want to sleep on, and it's probably because Baltimore is such a running team, is Rashad Bateman. I mean, he only played in 4 games with Lamar Jackson last year.
Right.
But in those games, he had 28 targets, 18 catches. He had 241 yards as a rookie. You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy. So he is the number one guy.
Yeah.
Like Marquise Brown is in Arizona. It's wide open for him to just tear it up. Him and Mark Andrews are it.
Yeah, right.
Like, they're about the entire receiving core.
That's true. Is Baltimore going to let Lamar Jackson sling the ball this year? You know what I mean?
That's
the other thing.
And again, so they're supposedly, I heard, they're on a mission. Like, Lamar wants to get paid, right? So he wants to look good. And they want to make the playoffs, man. They want to make a noise this year. So
let's see what they do.
Their defense is better.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting.
Let's see what they allow Lamar to do this year, right?
Yeah, you know? For sure.
What else? You got another sleeper?
Actually, another guy I kind of, again, like. Is Chicago, Khalil Herbert. Behind David Montgomery.
Right.
The crazy thing is David Montgomery in his entire career is averaging like 3.9 yards per carry. They can't be thrilled with that. It's his contract year. So he might be looking to get paid next year. Again, it's possible, like the Bills, they might just roll running backs. Khalil Herbert, again, is just, he's only played a couple of years, but he's averaging 4.4 yards a carry. He played four games that Montgomery missed with injury last year.
Yeah.
In those four games, he started two, but he averaged 19.5 carries, 4.4 yards per carry, and 86 yards rushing per game. Like, that's the kind of production that you're hoping your running back, I mean, if you're getting anywhere as 19 or 20 carries a game,
right?
You know, even if you're only getting 4 yards a carry, you're talking about 76 to 80 yards every game.
Yeah,
that's a 1,000 yard season, man. And that's without counting any receptions.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
Depending on what happens with David Montgomery, everybody's drafting him. He's going way higher.
I like it.
Like Herbert, you could basically get for nothing. He's going undrafted in most leagues. But to throw him at the end of your bench, he's going to play, you know, just because of that production. But behind him, there's a sixth-round rookie and a third-year player with a total of 16 carries. So he's the number two guy in Chicago. And they're going to be playing from behind a lot. So,
yeah, the opportunity can be there for him.
It might work out. It might.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, I definitely would take a chance with him late. And it's late in the game. It's like at the end of your draft, right?
Yeah, it's a late round for sure.
In our one league, we got 14 teams. So things are pretty slim pickings when you get towards the end of the draft.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so that might work out.
There's definitely guys to dig up through through the end of the draft. For me, a breakout player for me this year is going to be Breece Hall. So one of the things to think about, Breece Hall, since 2014, Jeff, NFL Next Gen Stats has given a 99 grade to six backs, including Breece Hall. Next Gen Stats has given out 12 elite grades, which is 90 or above. It's safe to say Breece Hall is in some elite company this year, dude. So he's a guy that could be a breakout player this year with the Jets.
Well, I'll tell you one of the things I like about Breece Hall. If, I mean, he's starting out, who's starting the first game? Joe Flacco, is it, in New York?
It's got to be.
Zach Wilson's hurt.
Because he's hurt, so it's got to be.
So even when Zach Wilson comes back, it's not like they're going to let him throw the ball 50 times, right?
Correct.
It's not going to happen. He's not that, it's not who he is. So Breece Hall is going to be carrying a rock a lot. And again, we talked about opportunity, right? Opportunity. And he's going to have a fantastic opportunity.
A big
time. So that's why I think he does have a chance to really, really shine this year.
Yeah, he is. And that's one thing I told you earlier. I think maybe it was today or yesterday. So one thing to watch for, when backs carry the ball 13-plus times or more in week one, tend to be very successful top 5-10 backs in fantasy football. When you carry the ball less than 13 times,
goes the other way.
Backs tend to be not so great for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
So just a little kind of tidbit for you fantasy owners out there. If you're doing some research, look at some of the backs that carry the ball last year that had more than 13 carries. Now, the anomaly was Najee Harris, for instance.
Yep.
Last year, week one, he had a bunch of carries, I think over 20. And then he kind of shit the bed for the next couple of weeks. He had an injury, this and that,
right,
but he still ended up with over 1,000 yards.
Yep.
So there's there's a few. It doesn't work across the board on every back, but generally speaking, you know, and this goes back to all the way to like 2006 or early 2000s when you look at this stat,
right?
And it's kind of interesting to see, but it really, I mean, 13 carries in week one is kind of the threshold, right?
Right.
And that's where it kind of separates who's going to be a good fantasy back and who's not going to be a good fantasy back. It's a cool stat to look
right
at.
Right. And again, that's an important point, is know your league too, right? Like we talked about, ours are PPR leagues, so you do get a point per reception. So Derrick Henry, for example, may not do as well, even though he's a fantastic running back. He doesn't catch the ball a ton.
He doesn't, no.
But you take other backs like, you know, maybe Miles Sanders or even Breece Hall, I mean, guys like that who are going to get some catches.
Yeah,
I'll tell you, Kareem Hunt is another one we haven't talked about. But as far as backup goes, he plays behind Nick Chubb. Nick Chubb is a running back. He runs the ball. But Kareem Hunt's their third down back, man, and he's their two-minute offense back. Like, he's going to have some opportunities to play and play a bunch.
Yeah.
So absolutely. Especially now, no Deshaun Watson for the first 11 weeks or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably not going to try to put everything on. I can't think of his name right now, the quarterback's name, but you know what I mean.
Jacoby Brissett.
Brissett. Yeah. Yep. They're not going to expect him to win them games, just manage games. So they may end up using Kareem Hunt a bunch. You know, but if your league is a PPR, it's going to matter. If it's not, you probably want to shy away from them.
Yeah, there's certain backs in fantasy that you really want to kind of look at, you know, because if it's PPR, a guy that's going to get, you know, 30 plus carries in a game, is he going to help you out a lot? Somewhat, right?
Right, right.
But if you're getting a guy that's going to get, you know, 14 carries and 6 receptions,
right,
that's going
to
help
you.
That's
like an extra touchdown.
Right.
Those 6 catches in PPR. So, yeah.
There's certain things to look at, for sure.
Again, know your league. I can give you an example of a league I was in. It was a 2-quarterback league. I didn't realize how heavily weighted it was towards quarterbacks and running backs. So here I think I had, at the time, this is several years ago, OBJ or one of the high-end wide receivers, and I thought I was doing great. But every year I was, like, not doing well. Because I invested too heavily in wide receivers that weren't scoring me any points. Once I figured that out, I improved my chances of winning every year.
Yeah. And that's actually something that, you know, you haven't heard me talking a little bit, and that's because I'm not a stat head. I don't get into football the way these guys do. But you can ask them, I usually do pretty good in fantasy. And the reason why is because I'm a gamer, and I know how to gamify shit. So one of the things that I do...
I like that term.
Yeah. One of the things that I do when I do a fantasy draft, and actually the ones that I usually do really well on, are the auction ones. Because in an auction league, nobody can go into it with a plan. You know, you don't know who's going to go for high, who's going to go for low.
Yep.
It's really hard to pregame it the way you can in a normal draft. And that's where I think a lot of people make a mistake. They'll load up their draft queue, and then they'll go watch TV or do something else.
Yeah, not a good idea.
And it's an active thing. What I like to do is sort by O-rank, sort by ADP, sort by things that people wouldn't normally think about, like sort by targets for receivers or sort by, you know, carries for running backs. Try and think about the individual stats that somebody might excel in that would put him higher than what people are predicting. Also, take a look at the predictive stats, because even though you don't know for sure whether they're going to hit that projection, it gives you an idea of what changed since last year.
Right.
Which people who don't care about fantasy as much, they don't look at that shit.
Yep.
They have no idea what people are predicting for those players.
Yep. There are some strategies when you're going into an auction style draft. You know, one of the biggest strategies that I've looked into, kind of read about, just trying to figure out auction drafts, because like Jay said, if you go into it, and especially the first year we did it, I don't know what the heck I'm doing. You know,
it was my league, dude, and I finished last, so
yeah,
we'll figure.
But it's just like you don't know certain strategies. You don't know how to do what and this and that.
Yeah.
But some of the biggest things that I really kind of gathered is when you're doing an auction draft, one of the biggest mistakes you can do is nominate a player that's going to be drafted way late. So meaning like if you go in and you try to nominate a guy that you know is going to be drafted in round 6 or round 7, don't do that.
Right.
What you want to do is you want to nominate all the top wide receivers, right, and running backs,
especially ones that you don't like,
right off the bat. You want to make people spend their money as fast as possible.
Yeah.
Because when you're trying to make guys spend their money as fast as possible for these big names, then what happens is you lose all your value for the rest of the guys that you're trying to fill in later in the rounds. You're tapped out of money.
Yep.
So if someone
you got like 3 or 4 really good guys, everybody else you're getting for a buck.
Well, and it's
that's it.
It's also a balancing act between being willing to pay more than other people for assets that you truly believe in, even if it's going to hurt you, because you can't leave with that money. There are people every year who get to the later rounds and they have way too much money left.
I've done that.
Yeah, and it's like, at this point, you have all the power. You can have anything you want. It might feel good. You can bully around all the other guys. But for what?
You're getting all those guys at the shit end of the pool. Anyway. Yeah, right.
And you know, like you're fighting over the fucking leftovers. Like,
right. You got to know your value too, right? Yep. Like when you're going into these drafts or auction, you got to know your value in these players. Because if you go in and you're like, okay, my top, you know, running backs is Jonathan Taylor, Austin Eckler, Christian McCaffrey, and those are your just boom, boom, you try to go after those guys. And let's say you get 2 of them. Let's say you get Jonathan Taylor and Christian McCaffrey. Well, you right off the bat, you just spent a big chunk of money.
Yeah, okay? You literally spent less than 100.
Yeah, you spent over 100 bucks right there.
Right. Yep. So now what's your plan after that, right?
Right, exactly.
And the thing is if you have a guy that you want to solidify in your team, sure, grab him first, okay? But after that, you have to have a strategic way to not only nominate. Don't go nominate a punter, guys.
Right, because you're gonna end up with several punters.
it's dumb to nominate a punter in the first, a couple of rounds. It doesn't make sense. There's no strategy to that. You want to nominate high end guys first.
To me, that's where my overrated guys come in. Guys that are overrated, in my opinion. I'm not going to bid on those guys, but a lot of people are. So, like you're saying, they're spending big bucks for a guy I don't think is worth the value.
Well,
so it's helping me.
And there's nuances to it as well. Like you talked about in a normal, fantasy draft that the quarterbacks aren't really as valuable as people would say. In an auction league, that can sometimes play to your favor because usually the first two quarterbacks will go really high. People will pay 20, 30 bucks for a quarterback when later they could get one for $4 or $5. But right after those first couple drop-offs, people get real hesitant about spending money on a quarterback when there's so many good running backs and wide receivers to pick up. You can sometimes edge those people out, spend $11, $12, $13, maybe even overpay. But because that middle ground for quarterbacks is so close, if you can get a little bit of an edge and get that really good third or fourth quarterback, it can make a big difference. So it's worth spending that extra $5 you might spend, overpay a little bit, because later you're not going to need that $5. It's not going to matter later.
Right.
And then, those guys, they'll be picking up, let's say a 8th or 9th ranked quarterback for $3 or $4. They'll feel great about it. But you've got the 4th or 5th.
Right.
If gives someone, you an edge. Yeah. If someone nominates a quarterback early, first or second round, and it's, let's say Jason nominates Josh Allen in the second round. Okay. Someone grabs him. Jeff, you're next. The next strategy that you're typically going to want to do is you're going to want to nominate another quarterback similar to his value.
Right.
Okay. So, because that's going to force
somebody you don't want.
Exactly. That's going to force someone else to spend money on a guy that they're, and
they're going to pick up the guy they didn't get.
Correct.
They're going to probably overpay for him.
Correct. So, there are certain strategies.
Yeah.
Yep. And guys that go into this not knowing the strategies.
Yeah. And I don't know if you guys do this. In Yahoo, you can actually do mock drafts. Now, auction drafts are kind of drawn out. They do take a long time, so you have to dedicate a little time to it. But don't hesitate to do a couple. I mean, honestly, I think it helps.
Yeah, if you're new into it, for sure.
It doesn't hurt.
There are different types of players. And I can always tell the players that are like my dad who, they do the mock drafts. They know all that shit. You can see it because when they take some player that to you, if you don't know what you're doing, is like, why do you take that guy? Everyone in the chat's all of a sudden like, oh, that's a fucking steal. Like, it's like those guys all know what's going on and they do pretty well. But you don't necessarily have to do that either. If you
exaggerates, by the way, they don't talk that way about me in most drafts. But go ahead.
Well, you're part of that conversation.
No, right? I know.
There's definitely 3, 4, 5 guys in every draft that if you're on a good fantasy league, they really know the in depth shit way more than you could ever keep up with. But you don't have to feel intimidated because as long as you have a good strategy going into it and you pay attention during the draft, like really pay attention the whole time, do some research. If somebody's not going right away and their value is high and you're wondering, why is everyone sleeping on this guy? Why is he ranked so high when no one's taking him? Google it. Find out. Find out why no one's taking him. If he's not injured or something, maybe he's worth picking up.
Right.
Other people might be, superstitious or thinking about dumb shit that doesn't really matter.
Right. Again, trust your instincts. Like if you instinctively go, I follow this player, he's better than this, I'm getting him. Get him. Just don't hesitate. Just get them. It's a game after all. I mean, I know there's some money involved for a lot of people, but it's still enjoy it. Like, have fun. I mean, that's what it's about. If you're not going to have fun, it becomes a chore, And sometimes,
some of these freaks, the chore is the fun part.
Yeah, I always talk about it. I drafted Terrell Davis early on, years and years ago. First round, first pick, Terrell Davis. I think it was like a game or two. broken leg and he's done for the whole season. And I'm thinking, well, my league year is over. And I ended up winning the league anyway because I just paid attention, stayed in it, tried to make moves, stuff like that.
So you know,
you're not out until you're out.
And like, it's the same thing like with that auction draft that we were talking about. I was one of those people who took Christian McCaffrey for $73 in round one, and I won the league.
Yep.
I don't know how, but like it doesn't mean it's over right. Just because he's injured in friggin' week two or whatever the hell happened.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. All right, guys, that wraps it up. We're kind of going over our time here.
For
so
sure.
Yeah, this was a long
sorry,
one.
We have joy fans.
Any last thoughts, gentlemen? Any other comments?
Well, I would just say, you know, check out our Sauce Quest podcast. You know, we're launching episode one here, and then, you know, we're going to do one every 2 weeks or so. It'll be really fun if you like hot sauce and you want to learn about what ones we've tried, and, you know, maybe you can't afford to buy all of them. You want to find out what ones we think are sweet.
Yeah. Maybe you just want to hear me squeal.
Yeah. And we'll be in a lot of pain. It'll be fun.
And if you want to know what makes us qualified to do a hot sauce podcast, absolutely nothing. We're just a bunch of guys
that's the fun of it.
Hot sauce, and my cousin owns a hot sauce / spice shop. So we're just, we're just guys that like hot sauce and want to review it and talk it. So listen to the podcast. We don't have any expertise over you. We just want you to hear what we think. So
yeah, and thanks again to Dilly Dally's. They've been very, you know, awesome with our podcast, helping us out in different ways. And we really like supporting the local business, especially. You know, we're in Springville. Having a hot sauce shop here is not something I ever envisioned as a kid that would ever happen. It's really fucking cool.
It's so awesome. It really is.
We want him to succeed. We want other people to know about his sauces and buy them. So check it out.
Yep. Yeah. Jay, tell them how to listen to our ETD podcast.
You can find us at ETD on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And it's at ETD Buffalo, actually. And then you can also find our podcast hosted on Anchor or anywhere you really want to listen to it. Apple, Spotify, whatever.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Really appreciate it. Season's coming up soon. So just want to end it with, where else would you rather be than right here, right now? Go Bills.
Go Bills.